Welcome to Conversations About Running, the podcast from Running Trips. Today, Callum and I are joined by regular guest, Coach Hugo Vandenbroek. Hugo is head coach at our Kenya Experience camps in Aten, as well as coaching elite athletes in India, Kenya, and across the world. During this episode, the three of us explore a range of topics sent in by our listeners. Of course, we go off on tangents, share anecdotes, and our own experiences along the way. But the main topics for discussion include training as a master's athlete, strength and conditioning for runners, and comparing the lifestyles and attitudes of the highest performers with those of amateur athletes. So sit back and have a listen to three runners and coaches on Conversations About Running. Right, thanks for tuning in to the Running Trips podcast. That's not what it's called, is it? For
fuck's sake. No. Conversations About Running.
Yeah. Right, Hugo, thanks for joining us again, mate. How are you getting on?
Yeah, I'm fine, thank you.
How are you guys?
Yeah, we're all right.
We've had a few guests in between, haven't we? Did you listen to the last one with Kevin Seward, Hugo? That was quite an interesting one.
Sorry, I didn't.
What have you been so busy with that's too important to listen to our podcast?
Yeah, nothing really important, but just having three kids and jobs, you know, so.
How is the newest addition?
Yeah, I mean, she found her voice, so she realized that it's really fun when she, you know, starts to produce a lot of noise. So, sometimes she's just sitting down and screaming very loud. And she thinks it's fun. So we think it's a bit less fun, but that's okay. So otherwise, she's 5 months now and trying to roll, trying to crawl. Everything is okay. It's nice. We've had a few illnesses here and there, a bit of fever, had to go to the hospital a few times. I mean, in Kenya also, you don't have a family doctor, right? So you the only option is to go to the hospital. So it sounds worse than it is. You basically go to the hospital for a little checkup.
Yeah, but, sure.
Otherwise, everything fine. My nights are a bit shorter than they used to be. I was always happy, lucky to sleep about 8 hours a night, but that's okay. Part of life. Kev, how is it for you?
Yeah, well, with the little in.
Yeah,
pretty similar to you. So we're at what, eight and a half months now, I think. Maybe closer to nine. He's doing good. He's at nursery right this second. This is his first week at nursery. So yeah, we'll see how many different colds and things he brings back from there. But he seems to be enjoying it. He's doing well. Yeah, like you say, they find their voice and they just decide they want to scream at you and think it's hilarious. I guess it kind of is, but it's a bit of a weird screech sometimes. We're enjoying it. It's still all very new, but yeah, we're having fun. We're just waiting for Callum to get involved now.
I'm not saying anything.
That's better than saying definitely no.
Yeah, that's true.
Callum, you've been doing some cross country?
Bits and pieces. Racing has been average, but training's been very good. I've got a couple of road races, which I'm much more keen on coming up in the next few days. I'm doing a 5K this weekend and then 10K the following weekend, which I'm a little bit scared about. But looking forward to it.
What's the five?
The 5K is the podium one. I think. Actually.
Oh, in Leicester?
Yeah.
And I'll be insulted if you don't stop by now. And now I know you're.
Well, I got a car full of people again, so we can stop by. But it'll be dinner for five if you don't mind.
I might take back the invite.
And then the following
we'll see what time
is.
It is.
Yeah, and then the following weekend is Telford 10K. You've done that before, have you?
Yeah, I've done Telford twice, maybe three times. Yeah, it's a really good race.
Yeah.
Assuming nothing's changed since I was last there, it's just. It's a very narrow, steep downhill start.
Yeah.
Which is.
But then you don't go back up that hill though.
No, you don't go back up it. So yeah, technically it's downhill, but I mean it's only like 100 meters and not. I mean, I say that steep. It feels kind of steep. It 10K race pace, but it's not like super steep. Yeah. It's just a narrow path through a park. When I was running it 31 flat pace that at Telford that has you in like 100th place.
Right.
So there's absolute chaos. Just
just wow. a lot of people trying to get through a bit of a bottleneck. Once it spreads out, it's a brilliant race. Yeah, it's just two laps, but part of that lap is out and back around a cone. And basically, second time you get around that cone, you've got about just under 2K to go, and it's just hammer it in a straight line for 5 or 6 minutes and just try and hold on.
Yeah, I've heard kind of a few bits of advice about how to attack the start, and most people are saying you kind of need to just get out hard and take advantage of the hill. But I just know that doesn't really work.
It's hard to know. I mean, for me, that downhill wasn't an advantage at all because I was so far back. So I started on about row four or five, I'd say, because it's a narrow start line, and we were just walking down the hill.
Because
it's just so bottlenecked. So you almost got two options. You almost have to accept that you're holding yourself back and therefore not getting the advantage of the hill, or potentially have to risk going out a bit too hard. I don't know. There might be a happy medium in there somewhere.
I just wanted to actually bring up the same discussion as what Callum said. We have a few of those races in the Netherlands too, and the kind of standard thing for athletes to say, you know, when you have a certain narrow point 100 or 200 meters from the start line, is that everyone says you have to go out really hard because you should be, you know, in the top 10 or whatever when you reach that point, right? So that's what everyone does. Everyone starts like crazy. And I've always wondered if that's true, but yeah, I guess it depends on the situation. Like you say, if it gets so narrow that when you're at the back, you just have to walk, that's a big disadvantage, of course. But at the same time, you've got athletes like Callum basically said, you know, you can blow yourself up when you start too fast.
Yeah, it is a tricky one. I would guess, Callum, that there's going to be a happy medium right around where you should be. You might find you're okay because it's not quite so busy that you're getting blocked out.
Yeah.
But yeah, without needing to go out, we've got, because I'm not being funny, but I've no idea who's in the race, but it's almost certainly going to be one under 29 minutes, isn't it? It's going to be fast. So you probably don't want to be at the front.
No.
No. Although I remember when Hilda ran the time that she won gold in the European Championships. It was quite funny. I was, it was a very wide start. And I think after about 200 or 300 meters, there was a sharp turn, and everyone was convinced that you had to be in front at that turn, because after that, it became much narrower. So Hilda, in her normal, the way she always runs, you know, she starts slowly. And I think she reached that point probably in 45th position. And the national coach from the Netherlands, Matt, he was screaming like, how is this possible? She screwed up her race. It's terrible. And what did she do now? And Hilda just, you know, slowly started passing the whole field. And after about 4 kilometers, she was leading and finally she won. So, I mean, it was narrow, but it was never so narrow that you couldn't pass anyone.
No, so, I mean, at the end of the day, it's still a 10K race. Yeah, it's not. It's narrow. Therefore, the rate, you know, it's still going to take you however long 10K is going to take you.
Right.
It's good. No, I think you're run well there. It's good.
Fingers crossed.
So today, let's try something a little bit different. We asked on Insta. We usually go pretty in depth on one particular topic. This time we asked on Instagram if people had anything particular they wanted us and or in particular Hugo to discuss, and we're going to try and work through probably four or five different topics in the course of the hour, and just see how long each one takes and how many questions we get through and take it that way. Is that good with you guys?
Yeah, sounds good to me.
Let's just jump straight in then. What was the first one, Callum? It's something about running in older age or as master athlete or something along those lines?
Yeah, we can do that one first. So we had a few different questions on this, actually. So I think one on Instagram was, is it harder to improve at running the older you get? And I'm assuming they mean kind of as you get into older age. And we had one on Facebook that said, how do you adapt your training for like veteran or masters athletes, what kind of adaptations can you make to the program? Hugo, what do you think?
Yeah, it's a good question. Of course, yeah, with older, what is the definition of older, right? I think a 25-year-old athlete would more easily improve than a 15-year-old athlete in general. But if we talk about, I guess they mean after the age of 35 or 40.
I mean, the guy particularly said mid-50s. But the other question didn't specify. So let's say 40 and upwards as a general. Yeah. General
we're talking idea. About masters athletes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would say, well, whether it's harder to improve or not, of course, that is a bit hard to say because it really depends on the person. So, you know, if you have a 45-year-old athlete and compare that particular athlete with a 25-year-old athlete, it's possible that the 45-year-old improves quicker. But in general, looking within the same person, I would a bit harder to improve when you're starting, for example, when you're 40, 45 years old.
I guess it depends if you, because I know and coach actually a couple of runners who are now 45 plus, who were quite good runners at a younger age but have then come back to the sport as an older runner, and I guess often that's difficult because you still deep down sort of compare yourself to the times you were running when you were younger. And yeah, I don't know, like you kind of ask yourself if you can ever get back to that position, which is tough, of course, because age isn't on your side at that point. Yeah, so I guess that's a harder, like, mental aspect of it as well.
Yeah, of course, that definitely matters. If you compare yourself with when you were 20 years old, it's different when you have no history back in the sport, so you have nothing to compare yourself with, right? Yeah, I coach several masters athletes who are 50 something, I mean they do improve, and we are able to improve, let's say, increase the mileage, even though they get older, up to a certain point. I would say, in general, with older runners, you want to be careful not to put too many quality sessions. Whereas younger athletes, you know, when you're talking about athletes of 15 to, let's say, 30 years of age, they could sometimes do 3 quality sessions a week. I have no problem with that, but that's not something I would try generally with a 50-year-old.
Is that because of the ability to recover, do you think?
Yeah, exactly. I think the ability to recover, especially from the harder workouts, reduces a bit. So, yeah, if you have a hard workout on a Tuesday, then generally I would plan another one on the Friday or in the weekend. Be a bit careful with the let's say the sessions at threshold or fast.
Maybe not quite so much of the shorter, faster stuff that you might give to a younger athlete.
Yeah. That's, I would be a bit careful with that.
So, for example, you're an advocate of hill sprints, for example. Would you give that to an older athlete, say like an older 10K or half marathon runner? Would you still put those short, sharp hill sprints in their program?
Yeah, probably I would, but I would be a bit careful with it. I would, you know, first give like 4 repetitions and see how it goes. How does someone feel the next day? Or I would give them maybe 6 to 8 repetitions, but I would tell them like the first 4, do them at 90% effort, or, you know, not all out. Whereas with younger athletes, that's generally not a big deal. You can give 8 to 10 hill sprints, and you can tell them to do each one of them at max capacity, or how do you say, maximum speed. With the older athletes, I'm a little bit careful with that.
I think that is a separate issue, not a separate issue, but I think that there is a distinction there, Callum. Because that isn't really, so if you're doing those correctly, that's not really something that you need a lot of recovery from anyway, because I think that links us into an excellent next thing we can discuss, which is what things we've talked about, some things that masters runners perhaps need to be cautious of, what things particularly should they include in order to allow themselves to continue training and at a higher level. And I think hill sprints would actually come into that category, because yes, as Hugo says, do them with a few cautious things in mind, but generally speaking, that's something which is we're doing that to prepare our bodies to be able to train hard as much as we're doing it for a direct performance enhancement, in my opinion. Like, you're doing that for the neuromuscular adaptations, you're doing that for the central nervous system stimulation. Do you two agree with that? And two, what other things can older runners be doing to keep themselves sort of physically capable of doing the kind of running that they want to do?
Yeah, good point, Kevin.
Oh, thank you.
Well, I also wanted to ask you guys how you look at it. But yeah, one of the things that I think are important for masters runners is strength training. I think that's more essential when you're in your 50s or 60s compared to when you would be in your 30s or something. I mean, I would give strength training to everyone. And sometimes people don't have time for it. They just have time for 4 running sessions a week and then we can't do it. But in general, you know, speaking about the average runner, I would say, yeah, for older runners, strength training is more important to I would say the most important reason is just that you're losing strength as you get older. I think one of the main differences between older runners and younger runners is that in terms of the speed that they're able to run at, older runners make shorter steps in general. So they can still, I noticed that myself, you know, I'm not that old, but now I'm 45. And I'm pretty sure that the main difference between, you know, the Hugo of 45 years old and the Hugo of 30 years old, I can run with the same frequency, with the same cadence, but I can't make the same stride length. And that is mostly because I'm losing power, I'm losing strength. And I think that's probably one of the biggest, you can say problems, eh? As you get older, one of the main issues. And you can maintain that by doing hill sprints, by doing weight training, by just doing, you know, strength and conditioning exercises.
Yeah, no, I agree with that entirely. And I actually think for older runners, you also don't need the weight training to perhaps be even as complex or as complicated as sometimes it is for younger runners, in that the objective really is just to keep the muscles, the tendons, even the bones in some cases with some sort of higher impact training, just to keep them strong and active. So even if it's just the case of you go and sit on the quad machine and do a couple of sets on your quads, a couple of sets on your hamstrings, a couple of sets on something glute related, like you don't necessarily even need to worry about, if you haven't got time or haven't got the know-how, you don't need to worry about, is my squat technique good enough? Am I doing these single leg deadlifts with good technique, et cetera, et cetera. You can just sit on the machine and just keep those muscles working just so they then have the capacity to be able to carry you through the running that you want to do.
Right.
Yeah. One like actual physical change I make to the programs of a couple of masters athletes is for almost all of the younger athletes I coach or have coached, I often put strength training on the same day as a run, and I'll rarely put it on its own in the program. So for example, I'll have like 30 minutes easy plus weights or 40 minutes easy plus strength and conditioning. But I often find that when, you know, if someone's kind of struck for time or the motivation or whatever it may be, I find probably 30 to 50% of the time they'll come back and say, oh, I did the run, but didn't get around to doing the strength exercises. Because when you see that on the program, it kind of looks like the run is the main thing. And then the strength exercises is like an optional extra, almost an added bit. So with masters athletes, well, not just masters athletes, but athletes who I think need it more, I'll put strength training as its own day, as its own thing in the program, so that they can see, right, okay, today's training is focused on strength and conditioning or weights, and they know that right, okay, this isn't an optional extra, this is the training. I think it's quite important to, pretty much like Gavin said, not just to see it as supplementary training, but something that actually really does contribute to making you a better, stronger athlete. And that's even more important you said, as you get older.
I mean, it does still come back to what Hugo said, I think, at the start of this mini topic, that it really, a lot of it does still just come down to what your background is. Like if you're coming to running at 50 years old, having been sat in an office for 12 hours a day for the last 30 years doing very minimal activity with, frankly, no real muscular strength behind you, you're in a very different position to if someone's been training at a high level for 30 years already. So just saying someone's 50, therefore they should do this. Yeah, as we alluded to, it only kind of gives you half the picture. And I think almost the worst position you're coming to it from, the more emphasis you need to put on the non-running stuff. Whereas for some people, right, it's kind of like, right, I need to do something to minimize my losses. Some people still need to make gains. I hate to use that term when we're talking about gym stuff. Like gains. hashtag gains. Sorry if I'm the only one to find that funny.
It's okay.
Some people need to get themselves to a good starting place. Some people just need to try and minimize the losses from the starting place they're already in.
Yeah. Right. It brings me to another question. This was not asked by one of our followers, but it's asked by myself. Just something I was wondering about.
You didn't type it in. No. If you didn't type it in,
that's true. Can let me go to Instagram now.
Yeah.
So you know, I am. So for runners who train 6 to maybe 10 sessions a week, when you guys give a strength session, I'm talking about especially about weights. So going to the gym and lifting weights like squats, lunges. Do you do it on the day of a workout? So maybe morning workout in the morning, then a strength session in the afternoon, or do you do it the day after a workout?
Things
about that.
Okay, so for me, for me personally, I try to do it on the same day as a hard day. Do exactly what you said. Train running hard in the morning and then lifting in the evening. My preference would also be for other athletes that I work with to do it that way. And I mean, the basic reason for that is because that's what I've heard Richard Blagrove say is ideal. And he's, in my opinion, the authority on strength training for runners. So it's almost like if he says that's the best thing to do, I'm just going to go with it without really needing to worry too much about justifying why. Like, that is the justification. But I guess the answer is almost certainly just to kind of maximize that hard day, and then the easy day, you're not also putting a really high stress stimulus on a day where you're trying to go easy. That's my take. Obviously that's not possible for some people, and you just have to adapt and work with it as best you can.
I've heard exactly the same reason from people. They say, I want to make the hard days hard and the easy days easy. So I don't want to have an easy day where I then again have to lift some weights, because, you know, I'm basically, when you know, the idea is then when you think about, how do you call it, you know, just your whole system on an easy day is in a recovery mode.
Sure.
So you don't want
to... I think it does go deeper than that as well, though. I think there are sort of hormonal things as well, like, you know, just, I don't know how long these kind of hormones last, and whether this only applies if you do the strength immediately after the session. But yeah, sort of certain hormone markers are up, and your body's just in a better place to do high intensity strength work. The flip side of it is some people maybe just don't have the energy or don't have the time, and you just have to work around that. I think still something is better than nothing, even if it is on a so-called easy day, because it's still anyone who runs a lot and does gym training knows that it's a vastly different feeling. I don't necessarily think that going to the gym, even if you work really hard on a day that is on your program as an easy day of running, I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing, because it's still so different. But the suggestion from people in the know seems to be to max out the hard days. Sorry, Callum, I've dominated that. Go on, you.
No, it's all right. I agree with everything you said, really. But interestingly, I do it the other way.
Me too.
I was going to say I do it the other way because Hugo writes my programs, and he's the one who puts it the other way. But yeah, my feeling is,
Callum, but don't worry.
My feeling is that I think either would actually work for me. I I've actually, in the past, before I was coached by Hugo, I used to do one gym session a week on a hard day, and then one like lighter gym session on an easy day. And that worked pretty well. But I find that for me now, I don't really consider a gym session to be hard training at all. Like, I don't find it mentally challenging. I don't find it, like, obviously the like 10 seconds while you're lifting the weight is tough, but I don't go home feeling like exhausted and like, wow, that was a really hard session. Kind of like in the same way we described hill sprints, like, you know, it's not a session that you should be exhausted from the next day, that you require recovery from. So I find actually that I can do a gym session on an easy day, and actually I can get more work out of that easy day while keeping it easy. So for me personally, on an easy day, I can do two runs and a gym session, and that still be easy mentally and physically. And I think that's been working pretty well for me. I did hear one coach say, not for weights, but he got me to do often core stability sessions after, like, immediately after very hard workouts. So I'll do like a track session and then core stability work. And his reasoning for that was that your core, you rely on your core more when you're tired and when you're, like, you know, you're flagging at the end of the session. Whether he has any science behind that or he just kind of logical conclusion, I don't know, but I quite liked that.
Nice idea.
So something something interesting that came to mind as you were saying that, Callum, is, like, so you know James, who lives next door to me. Hugo, he's a massage therapist at British Athletics. So working with, like, yeah, he went to Tokyo Paralympics with the Paralympic team and works with, like, the funded athletes on a day-to-day level. So he's a pretty decent discus thrower as well. A discussion I had with him the other day has kind of got me thinking. It basically went along the same lines of me saying what Callum had just said. And I was like, oh yeah, gym's good. It's pretty, I'm enjoying it now. It's pretty good fun. It's kind of hard, but it doesn't leave me tired. And he was like, oh no, gym's utterly exhausting. Like, gym is just the hot, like, you're working so hard. You have to work really hard to get the adaptations and et cetera, et cetera. And it just made me think, do I just take it too easy? Like, am I so used to, the flip side is maybe mine doesn't need to be as hard because he's training for a power sport and I'm training for endurance running. But yeah, it just got me thinking, because I'm so used to, even when you're working hard, if you're doing a tempo run or anything, you're still working at certain percentage. Do I go in the gym and lift weights and it's kind of hard because that's what I'm used to, but maybe I'm not actually working hard enough? I don't know. I've never worked with a strength coach. That's hard to know. You just kind of piecing information together. But yeah, that just popped to mind when you said that, Callum.
Yeah.
I think, of course, in the end, you have a certain amount of energy and a certain amount of, how do you say, you know, mental strength also and ability to persevere. So if you put a lot of effort into your strength sessions, almost without a doubt, you're going to improve your strength, but you will kind of pay the price in your running sessions in a way that you wouldn't have the same mental strength, I think. Right?
Yeah, I was going to say
part of the season, probably. Yeah, that's you know, you can choose to do that part of the season and say, hey, we focus on the strength block. And, you know, then if you have a session like 4x2 miles, you probably wouldn't be able to persevere so much because from all I know and what I read about it and the way I also experience it myself, we really have, we're like a battery, you know, and if the battery is half empty, you know, we don't have the same mental strength as when it's full. Right. So, yeah, if you empty your battery by doing very, very hard strength training, of course, you don't have the same amount of strength left for others.
Yeah. So what do you guys use, anything like kind of non-traditional strength training in the way of stuff like, well, I guess circuits is pretty traditional, but what I was thinking of, Hugo, in particular, is stuff like what Canova's kind of made popular with some of his articles and things that he's talked about over the years, like uphill circuits, running circuits, like where you do sort of, we used to do one where we do like, it's 2,000 meter rep, but at the end of each lap, you do sort of a high intensity jumping exercise, or different types of hill work where you sort of run uphill, then do some jumps, then run uphill again, then do some jumps. Is that kind of stuff on either of your radar or not?
You go.
Yeah, you want to start, Callum?
Yeah, no, go on, you start and I'll fill in.
Okay. yeah, so for me, that when I worked in India, that was something I would do sometimes. Yeah, pretty big part of the year, we would have a circuit. So I would set the circuit while I'm there. You know, I would be there for like 4 weeks in a row, 3 to 4 weeks. And then we would do the circuit once or twice a week with all kinds of strength exercise and then sometimes some running or some strides in between. But I really find that, first of all, harder when I coach people online. And secondly, you know, when you're a 40, 50 year old amateur runner who has a full time job and you're training 4 or 5 times a week, I don't think these things have priority. So, yeah, for my athletes in India, we were full time athletes. That was definitely something we did. And they're young also, you know, often with circuit sessions, it involves, at least part of it involves jumping and kind of explosive type of strength. And that is something I'm careful with older runners. Mm. So yeah, when we talk about strength for a 40-year-old, 50-year-old, I would prefer weightlifting rather than jumping or plyometric exercises. I'm a bit careful with that. Yeah.
But assuming then we're not talking about older runners for a second, would you consider that a running session or kind of an extra session? Like, would that be a run and then those circuits, which also includes running, or would you program that as one of the hard running days?
No. I would program that as a strength day. So they would have, for example, to keep it simple, Tuesday and Friday hard workouts and Sunday maybe a long run. So then maybe the Thursday or the Monday or the Saturday could be a session with either weightlifting or a circuit with some running in between. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So I wouldn't do it as I've never done it as a real work. For example, doing past with Saeed Shaheen.
Yeah, well, but that's the interesting thing is that it's one of those things with Canova. It's one of the things that gets talked about most often, or that's most common, like most commonly associated with him. But when I worked with him for like every day for 3 years, we only did it 2 or 3 times.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I don't think he ever did that with some of the athletes that I know.
We did it once with Florence. Canova was away, so it was just me, Florence, and a few other athletes, and it was so pointless. Like, it was so pointless. Like, she wasn't hating it. She was just laughing and giggling the whole way through, and I was like trying to get her to sprint up this steep hill and then do tuck jumps and
So probably not realized it doesn't really work with Kenyans,
right?
Or maybe he felt like the effect was a bit limited, you know, in terms of, you know, the actual improvement or the stimulus you get from it.
I mean, I also wonder if there's an issue of the type of athlete in the event that they're training for, because I did see Canova using it a few times with a middle distance group, but I worked with him exclusively with the marathon runners, and it might be a case of that it's something more for 8 and 15 guys rather than
steeplechase. I would say steeplechase is the one event where you would do something like that.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I know this wasn't our topic, but every time I see steeplechase on TV, I always think back to this, and I always think to my time in Kenya, and I really think that Western runners have so much emphasis on trying to look good over the barriers, and Kenyans are just about being strong enough to rebound back off them, and for it to just have as minimal disruption to their running as they want, and I think people just assume that just comes naturally, and like, oh, they just jump. And they jump without any particular concern for technique, which is true. Yeah. But the reason that's effective isn't just, oh, they just jump without caring about technique. Yeah, they're so strong and so reactive and so able to just absorb that impact and push back off, and for it to just have as little disruption to the speed that they're running as.
Yeah.
Yeah, a little aside, but yeah, I mean, I'm sure there's someone out there listening who likes steeplechase.
Yeah. Sure, that's very true. Yeah.
Okay. Should we jump to another topic? So we've covered two there. That's pretty good. We've done older running and a little bit on strength training.
Yeah. So one of the questions was, how often should you do strength training? Should we just?
Oh, okay. Go on. Yeah.
Let's add that onto the end. So I can kind of add to what you were just talking about, and it also kind of answers, in my opinion, that question. I think for most runners who kind of are somewhat experienced and have done a few years of training, I think that strength training does become supplementary to running rather than a key focus. I think it's a key focus for some people who particularly need it. Like, for example, Gavin, you gave the example of someone who's been fairly inactive, working in an office for several years, who now wants to get into running. Clearly, one of the first things they need to do initially is work on their strength so that they can do the running. But I think once you're at a stage where you're strong enough that running is very natural to you and you can kind of run, you can perform your training sessions comfortably, I think strength training becomes more about maintenance rather than kind of having to progress each session and, you know, make strength training a real key focus and something that's almost exhaustive. Part of the reason I'm saying this is because I put up a little video on our my coaching Instagram a couple of days ago, just with some examples of some strength exercises that runners can do. And someone asked in the comments, how do you make this progressive? Like, what can you do to, you know, progress the workout? And I answered him in the comments, but we also had a little chat on the messages, and I kind of said that things like this, I don't think the focus always needs to be on progressing it. Like, you don't need to be thinking all the time like, oh, how can I make this harder? You know, I need to add more reps, I need to add more weight. Yes, to an extent, it needs to not be easy so that you're still getting a stimulus, but I don't think, not in the same way that you would do that with your running training, not in the same way that you would make a long run harder, not in the same way that you would really attack a track session. I think, yeah, it becomes more about maintenance. So the number of times per week or the number of days that you do strength training depends on, how much you need to maintain that strength. And I would say probably for most people, that's, I would say, maybe, yeah, 1 to 3 times per week, depending on how much running you're doing, I would say.
I think one of the issues that you're coming up against here is that the general term of strength training covers so many bases, doesn't it?
And, exactly. Yeah, that's true.
I remember seeing a program of a top athlete who had like 4 times a week strength training. And I was like, wow, this person is really focusing on strength. Then I was there one time when she did a session and it was like 15 minutes of core exercises. And I was like, you know, I don't even put it on my program. I just do it almost every day, 10 to 15 minutes of core exercises after training. I didn't even consider calling that strength, but some people call that strength. For me at that point, strength training was either lifting weights or doing heavy leg exercises like hamstring bridge and stuff. But
exactly. And I do think that in 80%, I've pulled that figure out of the air, but let's say in 80% of cases, and for a vast majority of runners, you are doing strength, inverted commas, strength training for the reason that Callum just mentioned, to allow you to do your running. There's a whole separate issue of strength training for direct performance enhancement. But for most people, the reason they want to do strength training, or the reason they should do strength training, is to enable them to be robust and healthy enough to do the running, which is ultimately where you're going to improve at running.
Yeah, exactly. Right. And I just add into that briefly, I think in my own personal program, for pretty much all of the winter and going into the summer, during base training, essentially, I'm doing strength training all year round, which is weights usually twice a week, and core or like body weight exercises another twice a week, I would say. But then, and like you said, Gavin, that is pretty much primarily so that I can do the running workouts well, so that I can, so that I can be robust. But then as I get closer to my key races in the summer, we often add plyometrics once or twice a week, and that is for performance enhancement. So that's not necessarily to make my, you know, to enable me to perform my sessions well. That's actually to make me springier and stronger when it comes to racing. So yeah, again, two kind of different outcomes for different types of strength training as well.
And is that something that do you have a specific strength program written by someone else, or you just know the kinds of exercises that runners should be doing?
Yeah, the second one really. So Hugo will write on my program where he wants me to do the strength training and the weights and the plyometrics. And then usually it's kind of over to me to do, you know, what that session is.
I think that's the position that most runners are in, and even most sort of high level runners. I don't know if that's a good or a bad thing. I think it probably shows that you can get at least 80, 90% of the way. Perhaps you can get even better if you have that advice coming from a specific expert. But yeah, I think for most people, just doing a fairly generic strength program is okay.
Yeah, I think so.
And yeah, I'd agree. I'd be the same. Something in the region of 2 times a week, actually working hard. Other supplementary stuff is sometimes daily. For some people, that's core. For some people, that's calf raises. For some people, that's sort of the typical sort of banded glute work needs to be done more often. I think working hard twice a week seems a pretty good place.
Yeah, I agree.
I think we spoke about this. Well, I know we did speak about this in a previous podcast as well. A lot of people, especially in the last few years, are really focusing on running form, and they're very kind of, you know, concerned about how they run and their running form. And yeah, I think strength training is actually a good way to work on like imbalances or things that you think aren't quite right in your running form as well. So a lot of people turn to drills, which we discussed in that podcast, maybe aren't quite as effective as doing some specific strength exercises.
Yeah, I mean, let's not go down there because we will end up just talking for the whole time about it. But I mean, I think drills done correctly and with good purpose are brilliant. Drills done because you've got a predetermined idea of what running should look like visually are utterly stupid.
Yeah, cool. Okay.
I mean, plenty of people are making a career out of selling that, but I don't see any value in it.
No, agreed. Okay, next question is this one's on Instagram. So it's, what is the lifestyle difference between professional and amateur runners? So maybe not so much about the training itself.
That's a very wide-reaching question. I was like, I don't know.
Well, I think we can.
I guess they mean serious amateur runners. That could really just mean like, what's the difference between people who are super professional and everyone else? And it could be, I don't know, there could be any number of.
Yeah. Okay.
Or are we looking for what are the elite runners doing, which specifically differentiates them from non-elite?
Yeah, that I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Apologies for my laughter then to whoever that question came in. It's just I just had this vision of just sort of us comparing people who are out on the piss every night to someone who's super professional, and there being some sort of surprise that one of them is better for you than the other.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Right. So you shouldn't get drunk every weekend. I think we're looking for professional versus sub-elite kind of thing.
The habits of the best runners in the world, almost.
Exactly okay. That. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think. Anyway, I can speak for myself or my own. Vision or experience? But I'd like to hear also from you guys. I think on the one hand, there are quite some similarities in a way that there are amateur runners who are as serious in a way, have almost the lifestyle of an elite, only that they have to work. At the same time, you have also some amateur runners who are, I wouldn't say more driven, but they go a bit further, you know, being busy with exercises from morning to evening. Whereas for me, one of the main aspects of elites is that they really know how to separate training and recovery. So they do their training, they stretch after training, they may do 10, 15 minutes of exercises, and then they're done. And then they really know. And I think this is also something that you would, if you would test their hormonal system, you would see that they go completely in a recovery state. They may think about running and they still plan their day according to their running. They wouldn't go go out and have a party or go on a trip because they have their training, but they really know how to switch on and how to switch off. So that's kind of what I mean. And the second thing that I see sometimes with serious amateurs is they sometimes find it harder than elites to do what is right. So with elites, they can be a very how do you say? I can't find the right word for it, but they simply, when they know what is the right thing to do, they do it, and there's no emotion. You know, there's no emotion that comes in between that says, like, oh, I don't really like that, so maybe I shouldn't do it. Or when you tell an elite runner, like, okay, you're injured, so now you have to rest for 1 week, and then after that you start building up with 1 minute jog, 1 minute walk, they will do that. And they wouldn't question it, and they wouldn't be like, oh, you know, after 3 days I feel good, let me go for a run. You know, that's what a lot that's one of the big things that I see between amateurs and elites. And I realized, now that I'm talking about it, I realized there was this writer, I think it's Matt Fitzgerald, who said that elites are ultra realistic. And I think that's exactly describing also what I say now. They're ultra realistic. They know exactly what they have to do to reach the top or to reach their goals. And they do it without questioning it, without any feeling or emotion coming between them and what they have to do.
Yeah, sure. I can see that. And I think that's one of the reasons, slightly off topic, but I think it will help people understand maybe what we're talking about by emotion. I think that's one of the reasons why it can be difficult for a lot of people to coach themselves, because there's a lot of questioning of your own decisions. Like,
right,
something's there and then, oh, should I do that? Or should I actually do this? Oh, maybe I should change to this. Maybe I should change to that. And that in turn relates back to your first point, Hugo, but that in turn means you don't really switch off from it. You're constantly thinking and questioning and second guessing and wasting a lot of emotional energy on decision making rather than just having a clear plan and a clear outcome.
Yeah.
That's a very good point. That's quite interesting, because if I have like a bad race or a bad session or something, or sometimes the other way around, and I want to do more, and you know, I want to add more training, if I'm chatting about that with Amalia, my girlfriend, she, one of the first things she always says is, well, what would you tell one of your athletes if they were in this position? And I'm like, oh, it doesn't work like that. It doesn't matter. You know, I can't, of course I would tell one of my athletes if they had a bad race, you know, oh, okay, it's just this one race, your training's been going really well, let's focus on the next one. Yeah, I can say that to one of my athletes, but I can't take that into myself.
Yeah, no, you know,
I have to rely on Hugo for that, who's my coach, and he says that to me, and I understand and listen to him. But yeah, so I know what you mean about that kind of emotional side of things.
I made exactly mistakes there myself when I was coaching myself in, I think, was it 2009, 2010? I was training very well, and you know, everything was going great. And if I had had the coach, he would have told me, or she would have told me, to slow it down at some point, to reduce, you know, the training. Mm. But I didn't do that. I just kind of kept going and still ran a decent marathon. I think I ran 2:13 at that time. But I felt, I just knew I could have done a lot better if I had if I had controlled myself. So even for elite athletes, it can be hard to control yourself. Mm. But that's very true. Like, that's where you need a coach to look objectively. But yeah, when I see amateur runners, this is not a judgment, but just something I noticed, is that, you know, you have different types, of course, and you have some who say, like, you know, training has to be fun. I'm doing it, first of all, to be happy, and it needs to be enjoyable. elite athletes, they enjoy what they're doing, but they will never feel like it has to be fun. You know, like, of course, there are also differences between elite athletes. You know, there are some who, you know, can be on top of a mountain for 3 months with nothing to do around them and just training twice a day and that's it. Whereas others need, you know, to, you know, be able to meet people, to maybe go to the cinema or, you know, do something fun once in a while. But in general, it, you know, the fun aspect is, I feel like with elites is less important. On the other hand, you also have a, sorry?
Oh, I was just going to, there's just one of the things Canova used to say, maybe still does say, that amateur runners do the training they want to do. Serious, or like, I can't remember if it's elite or professional, or serious runners do the training they need to do.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's a good point. And the same, actually, it's not just for, to say, like, you know, one difference is that amateur runners do only fun sessions. No, they're also, definitely, they're also amateur runners who train more than they have to do.
Right.
Because they have that need to say, like, hey, I don't like a resting day. You know, there are people saying, you know, I don't feel good on a resting day, so let me just go for an hour. Just an hour easy doesn't matter, you know. With elite athletes, it doesn't work that way. If you tell an elite athlete, you know, you've run 180 kilometers in the last 6 or 7 days, now it's time for a rest day, okay, they take a rest day because they believe that, you know, that helps them.
Yeah, quite right. Should we try and get one more topic in before we close out?
Yep.
Okay. So we have, this could be quite a, maybe a short one for you, Hugo. Do you think being a professional runner helped you, has helped you now become a better coach?
Yes, definitely. I mean, not for everyone. I think, you know, for some amateur runners that I coach, I would have been an equally good coach if I had just been a decent runner, you know, not necessarily an elite runner, if you know what I mean. I mean, first of all, I think having run at a high level for a very long time, having met many athletes, you know, from all over the world, having spoken to so many athletes and coaches, helps to build up, you know, a base of knowledge next to, you know, what you read in the books, what I learned, you know, in college and stuff like that. Because, yeah, often, you know, the stuff you learn in college doesn't really, how do you say, you know, I think that there are a lot of, maybe not a lot, I should correct it, but there are coaches who have only the background in science, basically, then it's, I think it's just really hard to be a good coach when you don't have
struggle to apply that knowledge to real life almost.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, you can't learn from any amount of education how it feels to do that training, can you?
No, or exactly.
How it feels to be in competition. But yeah, exactly. But like you said, you don't necessarily need to be super elite to learn that, but you do need to be competitive to an extent.
Right. And I think, you know, for me, having been an elite, I think it mattered in, for example, or coaching, you know, in 2014, I coached a Kenyan girl called Gladys Chesir, who qualified for the World Championships and ran a world best time. I think for those kind of things, it helps because, first of all, you have experience with the type of training that is needed at that level. And I think more importantly, I think the whole way you look at training at that level, having been an elite runner, you know what is needed to reach the top from a mental perspective, from a lifestyle perspective, and you also ask that from your athletes. And at the same time, you know, when an athlete goes to the national championships or you know, to world championships, you don't get nervous, like, oh my god, what's going to happen, you know, this is like the biggest event of the year. No, you know, when you've, okay, I've never been to world championships myself, actually, but I don't experience the kind of nervousness that I see with some coaches when they would prepare their athletes for national championships. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't know if that's a good thing or not necessarily, but yeah, I think having been at a high level helps to, how do you say, you know, to put things in perspective and to... I find it relatively easy to have a very long-term vision and not to get too excited when I have an athlete who qualifies for a big tournament or something. And of course, you know, when an athlete qualifies, like I had an Indian girl this year who went to the World Junior Championships, and of course that's a goal then, but at the same time, it's, yeah, you know, it's, I still keep a long-term perspective and think like, okay, in the end, it's about how good she's going to be when she's 28 years old or 30 years old. And I think having had a background as an elite runner helps in that perspective. Yeah.
Sometimes that annoys me though, because I message Hugo saying like, Hugo, yes, I just had the best training session ever, and sending my times, and I'm like, and I'm waiting for him pull the party poppers and everything. I go, yeah, amazing, yeah, and he's just like, okay, cool. And on Tuesday we have this, and okay, cool.
I didn't even realize that. Okay.
I'm just joking. I'm just messing with you.
Yeah, but it's a very possible reaction from me. Yeah.
Cool. Okay, I think we've got time for one more actually, because this is quite a good one as well. So one of our followers said, how much emphasis do you put on stretching or rolling and things like that when it comes to staying injury free? So yeah, I guess all the little extra rehab / prehab exercises. And I think we have slightly different opinions.
I think we're going to have different personal experiences, but I think that's the whole point is you do as much as you need to do. And some people, like your body needs to be in a certain condition in order to be able to do the running. And if that's where you are now, then you may not need to do any, or you may just need to do a very minimal amount. Whereas if you've got a specific problem or a specific issue in your body that needs addressing, then the amount of that stuff that you're going to need to do is going to be higher. I don't think many people would come back and say, yeah, you need to do 20 minutes of this, 10 minutes of that, this many times a week. You need to have this exact warm-up routine and mobilization routine before you go running. It really is. Well, as far as I'm concerned, it's just a case of finding what's right for you and going from there.
I would agree with that probably. Like, for the same way for my athletes, I do ask them sometimes, are you able to get a massage? Are you able to use a foam roller? For me, those are the main things. I'm not so much into ice bath or any kind of compression equipment. It's mostly foam rolling, massage, sauna, but that doesn't really fall in the same category. At the same time, yeah, that's mostly, you know, how do they recover? If someone is doing well and recovering very well from training and having great workouts, and this athlete tells me like, you know, I didn't get a massage for the last 1 month, that's fine, you know. And if someone else says, hey, I really like to have a massage twice a week, yeah, I'm also okay with that. If I have an athlete who says, you know, coach, every day I get massage, and today the workout didn't go well because yesterday I didn't have my massage, then it becomes an issue. Then I would say like, hey, you know, I don't think you should depend so much on something like a massage. I feel like you should be able to recover well in general without a massage. And if you need it sometimes, that's fine. And if you need it twice a week, that's also fine. But if you need it five times a week, you know, to either roll your legs or do a massage, then yeah, maybe something is not very okay. And maybe you should see a physio and make a, either you have to change your mind about it, or maybe you should work on your strength, or, you know, do something else. But
I do think in that same kind of example as well, I see a lot of athletes who I think by doing all those little extra exercises and the rolling and the things too much, I think they make in their own mind, I think they can make too much of a problem out of something that isn't necessarily a problem. I think often part of being an athlete is like, obviously depending on the amount of training you do, but you are going to have like small aches and pains, and you're going to have tired muscles and sometimes tight muscles. But if you start kind of paying too much attention to that, and, you know, every day you have to roll it, like you said, Hugo, do you become reliant on it? And do you become not necessarily physically reliant, but do you become mentally reliant on it? You know, you feel like you're going to have a bad workout if you haven't done that 20 minutes of rolling or something. I think it can be, and kind of linking back to what you said earlier about elite athletes knowing how to relax and switch off, I think sometimes doing all those extra bits is keeping you too focused, and it's keeping you too involved in your training, when actually what might be better is just being able to switch off and kind of almost not think about it again until the next training session. That's partly my thought. So yeah, I guess we're all kind of on the right line that it's a balance, really. If you've got kind of certain issues that need attention, then doing things like some foam rolling or stretching or having a massage or something like that obviously can help. But I think there is a point at which you start to overdo it potentially.
I think the
go ahead.
Okay, yeah. So I think the problem there also can be that you're second guessing what is it that you need to do. Like, most people would be better off having a specific plan from a trained professional. Like, if it comes to something, if we're basically talking about how do I keep my body healthy for running, and are you just guessing? Oh yeah, I need to do this hip circuit every day after I run. I need to roll my foot every morning before I go training. I need to stretch my glutes for 2 minutes every night before I go to bed. It's a bit hit and miss. You may or may not be. You might be able to make that process much more efficient if a highly trained external eye looks at your body and says, right, these are the key areas, these are the ones to focus on.
Yeah,
right, right. And secondly, I see some athletes, this also happens with elites. I know I have a few elites in my head who I've seen doing this, who basically were struggling with an injury, having a hamstring pain, for example, and they just needed massage 2 to 3 hours a day to be able to do their training. And then I would say, hey, maybe it's time to take it a bit easier in your training, because you can't say like, okay, my body needs more recovery, so I just give more and more massage. I train hard, I have pain, more massage. In the end, when you have pain somewhere, often that's a sign of your body, like you're kind of overdoing it a bit. So sometimes you need to take a step back and say, hey, I need a rehabilitation period, or I just have to reduce the mileage, or I have to reduce the quality sessions a bit. Because massage or foam rolling cannot solve everything. You know what I mean?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, and if something's continually getting tight, there's an external reason for that.
Yeah. I mean, someone has a high goal and doesn't want to let go of that goal, and they feel like, I have to run, for example, 150K a week. I have to do these two very hard workouts a week to be able to reach that goal. And the only way I can do that is by getting massage 3 hours a day. Often that's already a sign that you're not going to get there. You probably have to press the pause button and say, hey, I need some recovery. My hamstring, my calf or whatever, my hip is not okay. Just giving, massage every day, that's like it's like when you have a wound and you're scratching it, it's bleeding, you put a plaster. The next day you scratch it, it's bleeding, you put the plaster. You can say, I need the plaster, but yeah, maybe you should stop scratching it,
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that analogy. Right.
Yeah, should we end it on that?
Yeah, I think so. That was pretty good.
Yeah, great stuff. Thanks, guys. Really good.
Thanks.
Yeah, Hugo, a couple of days and it's Kenya experience time.
Yeah. Looking forward, man. It's nice weather here in E10 and Eldoret. And, it has been, every day 20 to 25 degrees. We've had a little bit of rain, but mostly at night. And in that perspective, it's good. I think our team is ready to get some get a great camp. So yeah, we're really looking forward to it.
Yeah, I look forward
to it for sure. Yeah.
Nice. Awesome. Right. Well, we'll be sure to keep updated with what's going on there, and we'll catch up again for a podcast after that.
Yeah. Sounds good. Cool.
Cheers, guys.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Thank
you. Bye.
Thanks for listening to Conversations About Running, the podcast by Running Trips. Running Trips are the people behind Kenya Experience, the ultimate holiday for runners in Attend Kenya, and Training Focus Camps, a weekend of high-performance coaching for runners of all levels in the UK. To learn more about Kenya Experience or Training Focus Camps, check out our website at www.runningtrips.co.uk or follow us on Insta by searching for Running Trips Official. If you've enjoyed today's podcast, please consider leaving us a review wherever you listen to your podcasts. Your positive reviews help us to spread the podcast to a wider audience. Thanks for listening and happy running.